was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night falls in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
Welcome, Resurrection Republic, radio broadcast on RBN. Well, tonight you heard the first part was some exposure on Hillary Clinton and her lies. The second part of tonight's broadcast, I want to share some historical content with you from a man that I highly respect and who has in many ways been a mentor to all of us in this community. Mr. Eustace Mullins on the Clintons and their involvement in the New World Order.
I just give you a little hint. There are two people that are going to be here tonight for Rail and Russbacher's workshop that are going to be very interesting people to hear from, along with her. Okay. If there's one speaker who doesn't need any introduction at this conference, it's very well perhaps the next one. Many people have called in the past few months saying, I want to hear Eustace, I want to get an update. And I do believe that what was printed in the program about Eustace Mullins being one of the most plagiarized authors in his field is certainly very true. His research is some of the most thorough, painstaking, and correct that I know of. He's been at the source of enormous amounts of material, and we're going to try to ask him to condense the highlights into 50 minutes right now. That's enough for me. Now, welcome, and I know you're thrilled to hear again Eustace Mullins.
This is mine. I think they're out of your way.
Thank you. It's good to be among friends. Now, I'm going to give you the Encyclopedia Britannica in 50 minutes, so I'm going to have to speed right along. But I'll say, first of all, that I have some good news. I have sent a bill to Congress to disarm all federal agents. Now, that was necessary in order to protect the women and children of this country from these mad dog killers. Now, the bad news is that I am not president and Congress is not going to pay any attention to my bill. But I think it's very worthwhile and I think it needs to be done. It reminds me of the French philosopher Proudhon, who said, all government is a crime. So he knew what it... This was before the United States was even set up and he was already saying this. So he knew what he was talking about. But I get a strange feeling when I go to Washington, and I fly out of Washington, and My feeling is there is no government there. And it's a very odd feeling because I go on Capitol Hill and it's as though the atomic bomb has been exploded and everybody has, or the neutron bomb, and everybody has been wiped out. And I think the reason I have that feeling is that I have known for many years that the government is not in Washington. It's really in London. And that's why the subtitle of my Secrets of the Federal Reserve is The London Connection. And my subject today is murder by injection, the medical monopoly, the drug trust. And in order to talk about the medical monopoly, you have to talk about the money monopoly. And the money monopoly, of course, is the Babylonian debt system of slavery through money, which is 5,000 years old. And I was very glad to hear Raylan Rusbacher speak about the fact that this is a 5,000 or 6,000-year-old conspiracy. I have that in my book, The Curse of Canaan. And also, when she stood up here and told you that the only program that the government has is to exterminate you 250 million Americans, I have to agree with her. And in fact, in 1984, when I published The World Order, that was my conclusion. After the whole book, the last paragraph was that they do have a program of mass extermination for the American people. Now, the government that we have, this shadow government, this hologram government, if you wish, has really ceased to exist. And I say that for two reasons. I was the only person to ever point out that the function of government is to protect the gene pool and to protect the borders of the nation from invaders who would contaminate the gene pool. And in fact, this is the basis of all law. If you look at ancient Roman law, what was the origin of Roman law? And I have this in my book, The Rape of Justice. The origin of Roman law was to protect the gene pool. The patricians passed laws because they were the most active and the most energetic and the healthiest of the people. They passed laws forbidding their families to intermarry with the plebeians. And who were the plebeians? They were simply people who didn't know who their parents were. In other words, bastards. So naturally, the patricians did not want their gene pool contaminated by these bastards. So they passed laws. And Rome went through the same process of liberalization and socialism that we have here today, where the plebeians agitated for several centuries to overthrow the laws that the patricians could not be allowed to intermarry with plebeians. And they finally annulled those laws, and that was the beginning of the end of the Roman Empire as we know it. And of course, America was founded by people who wanted to protect their gene pool. And in order to do that, they had to get out of Europe, where they were too tyrannized, they were oppressed, and they came to this country. And in fact, my ancestor William Mullins is not an Irish name, by the way, it's Moulin, it's French, and William Mullins was part of the growing French middle class. And you only had the aristocrats and the peasants in France. So here suddenly you had a very inventive, active, aggressive middle class growing up and spurring the economy. But the aristocrats, the church and the state and the throne, resented this. They saw it as a threat. They said, how can we handle this middle class, which is becoming so prosperous and perhaps a little arrogant? So the only answer they had was to murder them. Just as your government today in Washington, the only answer they have to the problem you pose is to murder you. They can't deal with you, so they'll just kill you. And they're trying to do that by many different means. So William Mullins survived the massacre and went to London and became a shoemaker. And, of course, prospered because he was a very hardworking person. So he came over to the United States then and he authored the Mayflower Compact, the first governing instrument in the United States. And So this is how we got to this country. We came here to build something. And that's our mission, is to continue to build, to continue to grow. I have said for many years that America is on the threshold of history. Because even after our victorious American Revolution, what happened? Alexander Hamilton, the emissary of the Rothschilds, set up the first bank of the United States, a central bank, to continue to oppress us through the Babylonian debt system. And of course, Thomas Jefferson opposed that. And I have his wonderful list of attacks on the central bank, which I published in The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Was just as true then as it is now. He said it's alien, it's a corporation, it will never die. And when you have a monster like that, what does it do? It enslaves everybody. Just as today, the Federal Reserve has a lien on everything in the United States, including yourselves. In the courts today, you are considered as property. You are a small corporation which can be handled through the Uniform Commercial Code as a piece of property, which totally negates the Constitution, totally negates the Bill of Rights. And so this is why we have this enemy which we have to fight. And this is why when I began to expose the Federal Reserve System through a political prisoner held in an insane asylum for 13 years without trial, and I was instrumental in obtaining his release after that time. There was never a trial. The government dropped all charges and he walked out. And the reason for that was that Ezra Pound, this political prisoner, had sent me to the Library of Congress in 1948 to see what I could find out about the Federal Reserve System. And what I found was, it is and was a criminal conspiracy conceived in secret. And in fact, the secret agent of the Rothschilds there at Jekyll Island was Paul Warburg. And here is Leslie's Weekly of 1914, in which they exposed that meeting. And this says, Warburg is the link that binds the Aldrich system and the present system together. His was probably the most constructive mind in the Jekyll Island group. And here is what he wrote about our banking system in 1907. The United States is at the same point that had been reached by Europe at the time of the Medicis. We have been shown bricks of the time of Hammurabi, the Babylonian monarch, evidencing the sale of a crop and similar transactions, and I am inclined to believe it was easy to transfer the ownership of these bricks as it is today for an American bank to realize upon its discounted paper. Now, what Paul Warburg, the author of the Federal Reserve Act, is saying is that he is operating on a Babylonian system. Now, you don't need any more evidence than that, and it's all there. And why do I talk about the Federal Reserve System now when my subject is the medical monopoly? Because the chairman of the Jekyll Island meeting was Senator Nelson Aldrich, whose daughter married John D. Rockefeller Jr. And we have in Virginia today, if you go to Williamsburg, you have a very fine museum of early American painting there called the Abby Aldrich Rockefeller Museum. And, of course, the Rockefellers restored the entire city of Williamsburg, rebuilt it in their own image as a museum. And the implication there was that this time was past, that the founding fathers were now stuffed museum figures. They no longer were alive. They no longer had any relevance in the modern America. And tourists who go to Williamsburg, they get that feeling. They think, well, you know, the founding fathers are not like us. Well, they're the same people as you and I, the same blood, the same ambitions, the same hope for America, which, as I say, the history of this country was interrupted in 1787 with the introduction of a central bank, and it has been interrupted ever since because we have not been able to realize the potential and the destiny of America. And that's why America is the future, not the past, not the present, because we are still the beacon light of the entire world. Because that is the goal, that was the promise, which was held out to the people who came here. And that promise is still valid today. So because I began this work, and because I was associated with Ezra Pound, who was under indictment for treason, because he stood for the Constitution. Just as when you go into an American court today and you bring up the Constitution, you make the judges angry. Because you're supposed to realize and submit and to say that you no longer are protected by the Constitution. So at any rate, the FBI kept me under personal surveillance for 33 years. And when you're under daily surveillance, you have to behave yourself. So I behaved myself. I was never arrested. And so I had some very interesting observations to make about J. Edgar Hoover, who had become my enemy, of course. And in fact, when I published My Life in Christ in 1968, I brought out the facts about his personal life, which you have seen on television recently in a PBS special. I published all that in 1968. When I went to Washington in 1948, and I was befriended by the founder of the National Press Club, every journalist in Washington knew J. Edgar Hoover's personal history, but they didn't dare print one word of it. And so, when I saw this PBS special about Hoover's history, and they mentioned that he used to wear a black chiffon, well, I always said that black chiffon was totally wrong for J. Edgar Hoover, and I say it today. But one of the more interesting functions of the FBI was that they had to protect the degenerates in the Washington bureaucracy from their own excesses. And in fact, J. Edgar Hoover, of course, was heartily hated because he had achieved, as a masterpiece of public relations, he achieved a national reputation as a great anti-communist, a communist fighter. And so when Harry Truman became president, he had a communist assistant named Max Lowenthal, who came to him and he said, "Mr. President, I know you've got many important things to do, but I want to remind you one of the most important things you could do right now is to get rid of J. Edgar Hoover as the head of the FBI." And Truman gave him a rather icy look, and he said, "Why do you say that?" Well, Max Lowenthal didn't want to come out in the open, and he says, he hemmed and hawed. He said, "Well, Mr. Hoover, you know, his personal life." And Truman looked at him, and he said, "Look here, young man." He said, "I happen to know that J. Edgar Hoover has had a very stable personal life. He's been married to the same man for 35 years. But one of the functions, as I say, of the FBI, not fighting crime, but they had to protect the degenerates in Truman's administration. His closest personal assistant was a David Niles, actually Newhouse. And David Niles had one sister who was in the KGB in Moscow, and he had another sister who was in the KGB, in the Mossad in Tel Aviv, Israel. So he was very well connected. But he was a homosexual, and he went out from the White House in the evening and cruised around and picked up partners. And to protect him from being beaten up by these people after he picked them up, two FBI agents had to follow him around through the alleys of Washington, back of the White House, and up in 16th Street. And they would crouch behind garbage cans while David Niles was consorting with these partners. And so then if the guys started to beat him up, they would run forward and say, "FBI," and of course they would take off. And that was their mission. That was the mission of the FBI. And of course, when Walter Jenkins, LBJ's closest personal assistant, with whom he used to swim in the nude in the White House pool every day, when he was picked up at the YMCA a half block from the White House, J. Edgar Hoover rushed over to the hospital to see what he could do to protect him, because that was the mission of the FBI, was to protect the degenerates. And so this is the real Washington, the Washington you don't hear about. You've never read about this. As I say, a little bit of it came out. But anyway, I used to write letters to J. Edgar Hoover because I was rather a provocative person. So in 1954, I was in Chicago, and I wrote a letter to J. Edgar. And I said, "Don't you think it's time that you gave up Clyde?" Well, My apartment was surrounded by FBI agents. I had cars parked out with, they were all talking in the microphones, you know. And I was having a great time. And so this was my way of fighting back and surviving. And in fact, in my seminar, I will talk about how to survive under a criminal government, because that's what we have. And in fact, I was in Idaho campaigning for Bogrites at the time of the Randy Weaver murders. And I was invited to appear, or was arranged that I'd do a half-hour interview on a radio program there. So I went on this radio program, and I had a young, rather nervous host. And I started right in. I said, the Federal Reserve Police are on a murder raid in Idaho. And he interrupted me. He said, oh, those are not Federal Reserve Police. I said, who do you think pays them? And I said, this is a murder raid. They intend to kill that entire family. And, of course, that's what they tried to do, but they escaped, probably due to Bogrites' intervention. And, of course, the Waco massacre was the same operation. It was a test to see what reaction would be from the American people. And, of course, David Koresh had no idea what was happening. In fact, they published the transcripts of his telephone conversations in which he continually quoted scripture and mentioned the coming of Jesus Christ. And this was the lunatic that was portrayed and caricatured. Three TV programs shown on national TV immediately after the Waco massacre depicting Koresh as a total lunatic. But Time magazine of May 3rd did publish a letter written by David Koresh on April the 3rd, in which he said, if anything, if this assault continues, he said, the waters of the lake will be emptied through the broken dam. And those words are in Time magazine. And of course, we have had the floods, and an inner lake is now forming in the middle of the United States. So that could very well be the natural result of this terrible massacre in Waco, Texas. And the reason that they do these things is also the explanation of the medical profession in the United States, and that is Satanism and occult practices. And here again, we go back to the ancient world, the Babylonians, when they built in Pergamos the great temple of Asclepius, the largest healing center in the entire ancient world. And it was named after Aeus, the son of Apollo, who became the healer. But he healed not by God or through God or by purification, which is the ancient healing method of every people in the world, not merely the Indians or anyone else, but purification, but to do it by artificial means, by what they call pharmakia. Now, what does pharmakia mean? You know, the pharmaceutical industry takes their name from that. Pharmakia means, in ancient Greek, it means sorcery or witchcraft. And so this is the basis of the pharmaceutical industry in the United States. This is why they use chemicals and drugs to induce unnatural results in the human system. So Aeus and his father, Apollo, the sun god, each of them appeared on earth as a serpent. So what do we have as the emblem of the medical profession? You have the twined serpents, the caduceus, which is Aeus and Apollo. That is at the occult. And it is salvation through the material flesh, not salvation through God. And it comes from the temple of the occult. So when you walk into a doctor's office or you walk into a hospital, then you're walking into a temple of the occult. And this is why the Clinton administration is dedicated to health care. Well, part of the reason is the mounting costs, because the Washington Post published a story last spring in which they stated that the established medical order, that is, the approved hospitals and the AMA physicians, had stolen in the last year $77 billion from Medicare. And they predicted that by 1995, they would be stealing $100 billion a year. Now, I'm not talking about quacks or naturopaths or chiropractors. I'm talking about the established medical system is one huge burglary ring, and they're doing it through the hospitals and the AMA. And that is why the AMA has their medical monopoly. And this is why the drug trust has their medical monopoly. This is why they operate through the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which, by the way, was set up to protect you and me against drugs which were poisonous or toxic. And there were a lot of those in use at the turn of the century. And the abuses were so widespread, they said, we've got to turn the government to help us. And so they set up the FDA. Well, soon after they set it up, of course, the drug companies moved in and took it over. And the New York Times published a story last year that the Food and Drug Administration does no testing. They simply accept the results which are sent in by the drug trust companies. And of course, the drug trust companies, when they send in their test results, they omit or they lose. They forget to send all of the toxic side effects that destroy the liver and the heart and the brain and the kidneys. And so people start taking these drugs, and then many of them are die very soon afterwards because of these toxic side effects, which the FDA has never seen. And so then they begin a long process through the legal system to take these drugs off the market. And even after a drug has been proven to have these fatal side effects, it takes from 2 to 10 years to get it off the market. And then, if it can be sold in the United States, they sell it to other countries. And the drug trust itself came about as a natural result of the Federal Reserve secret meeting at Jekyll Island in 1910. And of course, the act was passed in 1913. And there again, John D. Rockefeller's son-in-law had set up that whole meeting and run the whole thing so Paul Warburg could bring a Rothschild central bank to the United States. And the result of that meeting on Jekyll Island is you have a $4 trillion national debt created out of nothing. And that, again, is occult. You see, God can create something out of nothing, but ordinary humans cannot do that. Only through satanic means can you create something out of nothing, through the use of the occult. So that's what we have, an occult temple, and they have a temple, a marble temple, right there on Constitution Avenue in Washington, D.C. That is the headquarters of the Federal Reserve System, and it is a temple of the occult where they open their ledgers, and perhaps Baron Rothschild calls Alan Greenspan from London, and he says, enter in your book $10 billion so that the American suckers will have to pay it.
And we will be back after a few words from our sponsors with Eustace Mullins, Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast on our
for you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, talking pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for a fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009. But now OneCoin, as the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
Would odors, mold, and mildew describe your basement or crawl space? It doesn't have to be that way. Transform them into a fresh, healthy, usable one with the technologically advanced Wave Moisture Control Units. The computerized operation maximizes moisture control and also expels harmful radon, combustion gases, and numerous other pollutants. Dehumidifiers are old technology that do nothing for air quality and waste energy. Wave units are intelligent, self-monitoring, do not need maintenance, and will save you hundreds in electricity. Wave units are still running effectively over 15 years. They've been tested and installed in public and military housing and by property managers nationwide. Buy a unit now, and if your home is not fresher and drier, you can return it for a full refund for up to 12 months. What have you got to lose? Call now. 1-888-618-WAVE. 1-888-618-WAVE. Or visit MyDryHome.com. That's MyDryHome.com.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Mother of the moon, which built my sails, crossed the sea of years.
Welcome back to the Public Radio Broadcast on RBN. You are listening to Eustace Mullins, and you can go to ResurrectRepublic.com and check out Eustace's materials. And special thanks out there to The Rape of Justice. The Rape of Justice also happens to be a book by Eustace Mullins. Excellent books. I highly recommend all of his books. We're going to be posting them on Resurrect the Republic as well. So getting back to it, Eustace Mullins.
They open their ledgers, and perhaps Baron Rothschild calls Alan Greenspan from London, and he says, enter in your book $10 billion so that the American suckers will have to pay it. And Greenspan enters in the book, the ledger, the United States people now owe us $10 billion. And that's how we get the debt. That's where the debt came from. Created as bookkeeping ledger entries. So Clinton's great budget reduction plan was a total farce because it never mentioned the Federal Reserve System. So how do you reduce the deficit when you've got people there in Washington in this marble temple of the occult who can write in, I don't care how much you reduce the deficit, you can reduce it down to nothing, then they're busily writing in $100 billion here, $100 billion there, and you write back at the $4 trillion. Doesn't matter whether you raise taxes, doesn't matter whether you reduce government employees, because the Federal Reserve is still there, still doing its job. And, of course, this was never mentioned by anyone during the great congressional debate on the budget. If only one congressman, and indeed, Congressman Henry Gonzalez, the chairman of the House Banking and Currency Committee, had stood up and said, "Gentlemen, we're wasting our time talking about reducing the deficit until we deal with the Federal Reserve System." But did Henry Gonzalez do that? Absolutely not. He never opened his mouth. In fact, I have a letter from Henry Gonzalez written to one of his constituents, and I went to his office a year ago and I took him the new edition of my Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and I waited for the phone to ring, and it has never rung since. So, which often happens to me, by the way, I wait for those calls, they don't come. And so this letter from Henry Gonzalez to his constituent, about 6 months after I had given him this copy of the Federal Reserve, and he wrote to his constituent, he says, "I beg to disagree with you. The Federal Reserve System is not privately owned. It is a government agency." So if Henry Gonzalez believes that, you can be sure he's not going to do anything about the Federal Reserve System. And there it is over his own signature. So, and I know that he knows better because the chairman of the banking committee, Wright Patman, also of Texas, was a good friend of mine, depended heavily on my book, and he fought the Federal Reserve System throughout his congressional tenure. And he, like Henry Gonzalez, was a Democratic populist from the state of Texas, and he never wavered. He fought them as long as he was in Congress. And in fact, he told me that he had two goals. One was to find out who the actual owners of the Federal Reserve stock were, because, as Henry Gonzalez knows, the United States government has never owned one share of Federal Reserve Bank stock. And neither will you, because you can't buy it, because they wrote into the Federal Reserve Act, Paul Warburg wrote, that this stock cannot never be sold or exchanged. And so the original owners who bought it in 1914, their families own it today. They have protected this through trusts, the Rockefeller Foundation, and all the other tax-exempt foundations. They were really set up to protect their ownership of the Federal Reserve Bank stock, because that's what all their fortunes are based on. That's their magical money machine, where you put in a piece of paper and you crank out a $100 bill. Well, obviously, confidence artists might want to sell you a machine like that. But these people who own these machines, they don't want you to have it. They want to keep it themselves. And with that money, they buy up everything else. And that's how they bought up the drug companies. And that's why John D. Rockefeller, after having set up the Federal Reserve System, passed it as a public law through Congress in 1913, he turned to the medical profession, because he thought, this medical industry offers enormous profits, enormous cash flow. So he had one of his assistants, Abraham Flexner, do a study to reform the entire medical profession of the United States. And this is what he did. He switched us over from a naturopathic, homeopathic system of medicine under which, in the 19th century, the American people had become the healthiest and most productive people in the world. And he switched us over to the allopathic system, a German system of medical practice, which depends heavily on the use of drugs, on radical surgery, and extended hospital stays. So that's what we have today. And that's why we have this enormous healthcare deficit and expenditure, because this is what was created by the allopathic system of medicine. We never had this under homeopathic system, and that is why many Americans today are looking for naturopathic healing. They're fleeing from the allopathic system, and they're fleeing from the cut, slash, and burn methods of the cancer industry. I have a chapter called The Profits of Cancer. And who do you think set up the American Cancer Society in 1913 also, at a meeting of the Union League Club in New York, the hangout of the big rich? John D. Rockefeller Jr. organized the American Cancer Society. Now, the reason he did that was that his grandfather, William, John Dee's father. William had prospered for many years as a carnival sideshow barker who advertised himself in big letters as the great cancer specialist, William Rockefeller's miraculous cures for cancer. Now we're talking about 1840, 1860 here. And he also was a well-known horse thief. And he also was constantly fleeing a number of warrants for rape. And in fact, he died, John D. Rockefeller's father died under an assumed name and is buried in Indiana under the name of William Livingston. And this is the founder of the greatest dynasty in American history, and yet he's in buried under a false name because John D. Rockefeller could never acknowledge William Rockefeller as his father because he would have had to also explain the warrants and explain this fake cancer cures. But that is the backbone of the Rockefeller empire today. Not Standard Oil, but the medical trust, because I picked up a book by Morris Beale in Washington a number of years ago at the Library of Congress called The Drug Trust. And in there he made what was to me an astounding claim that all of the drug companies in the United States were owned by the Rockefellers. I thought, now that is absolutely going out on a limb. I don't believe it. And I began my research. And I researched the 18 largest drug companies in the world. And I found that indeed, on every one of them, from Merck, which is number one, that they had 2 to 5 representatives of the Rockefeller empire on there. They had directors of Standard Oil. They had directors of Chase Manhattan Bank and the other Rockefeller entities. They're all right there in black and white in Poor's Directory of Directors, and Poor's Standard & Poor's listing of corporations. You can see it for yourself, and I reproduced it in Murder by Injection. And the evidence is there. So sometimes, and many times in my research, I have come across claims which seem to me to be fantastic and ridiculous, and I have researched them, and I've found that they're absolutely correct. And in fact, when I chose the title for my book about the medical monopoly, and I decided on Murder by Injection, I thought, well, that's pretty strong, but I'll use it anyway. And then, after I published it, more and more information came out about people dying from the poisonous effects of the toxic effects of drugs. And in fact, now I consider it to be quite a modest title. So that's how that's how events catch up with you. You know, writers are punished by having everything they say in their books come true. And that always happens to me. As soon as I get a book out, I find on the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post stories that absolutely bear out everything I said and contain a lot of information which I wish I'd been able to get in my book. I picked up the Rocky Mountain News on Wednesday, and it said, drug stocks push Dow to new highs. And the reason drug stocks pushed up the Dow Jones to the new high was they're making so much money. So when we talk about the costs of health care, we're talking about the inflated costs of the drug trust, the Rockefeller monopoly of the 18 largest drug companies in the world, because they keep pushing up the costs of these things, and people pay them because they have the insurance. The Blue Cross is set up so that it's painless. It's like painless dentistry. They extract and you don't feel anything. And so that's what the drug trusts do, and that's how we have arrived at this dilemma. And you know, I've been going to Jackson, Wyoming for a number of years, which John D. Rockefeller Jr. bought the entire area in 1924 because he realized that this is the most magnificent scenery in America, and that there was a lot of money to be made out of it. So he bought it all, and then he set aside part of it as the Grand Teton National Park, which adjoined Yellowstone Park. But he retained, you know, a lot of the land for himself, and he made a lot of money there. They have the Jackson Hole Lodge, which is a scene of international conferences. The Russians come, everybody comes, because it's part of the Rockefeller Empire. And in fact, he had a congressman from there named Cheney, and representing the Rockefeller Empire up there in Wyoming. And they wanted Cheney as Secretary of Defense. But Senator John Tower of Texas had priority on the claim for that office because of his long service, and he was very influential in Washington, and he represented the Texans. And so Tower was due to become Secretary of Defense. Well, they call in the FBI. Whenever they need dirty work to be done, they call in the FBI. So the FBI went out to the newspaper reporters in Washington over the press club, and they showed them that supposedly confidential reports that Tower was a womanizer and a heavy drinker. Well, the reporters thought at first he must be talking about Teddy Kennedy. But they said, no, John Tower is the offender. And, of course, John Tower was actually no more of a womanizer or drinker than any other senator, and probably less than most. But they flooded the national press with these FBI leaks about John Tower, and they prevented him from becoming Secretary of Defense so that Rockefeller's man, Cheney, could become Secretary instead. And that's the inside story on that. And then, because John Tower then wrote a book exposing this conspiracy against him, he was very angry. And so what happened then to John Tower? He was flying in a small plane down at Jekyll Island, and he hit a power line and was killed. So I thought that was very interesting, because actually he died at Brunswick, Georgia, which is another interesting parallel which I bring out in The Curse of Canaan, because the House of Brunswick was the founder of Freemasonry throughout Europe. And of course, they took over the English throne as the House of Hanover, but they were actually the Duke of Brunswick's. And it is the Brunswick's which are the royal family of England today. And of course, as I say, John Tower died at Brunswick, Georgia. So there's lots of symbolism there. You know, I was in Jackson a couple years ago, and I guess they decided it was time to shut me up. So they burned a motel down around my ears, and they chose Friday the 13th to do this. Because, you know, in the occult world, you have to stick with your symbols. So at 3:30 in the morning in Jackson, I was in this on the second story of this frame lodge in Jackson, and I woke up, which I don't usually wake up at 3:30 in the morning. I sleep fairly well. And so I woke up. It was as though someone tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked up, and everything was very quiet. Then I saw lights dancing on the window, and I thought, well, is somebody out there partying at this time of night, 3:30 in the morning? So I got up and looked out the window, and I saw a sea of flames. And I opened the door, and the stair was engulfed in flames. So I ran down the corridor. The ceiling was burning. I ran, and I got out with just, you know, my trousers, because I had to leave everything. And so that's actually one of the closest shaves that I've had. It's made me a little nervous about staying in motels ever since. You know, if I hear a little peep or something, I I wonder. And if I take a shower, I leave the door open so I can hear the alarm in case it goes off. But it does make you a little nervous. But I still continue to travel, because I think it's so important to be with you and to talk to you about these things, because these are things we all need to know for our survival, and that's what I'm going to talk about in my seminar, because we're up against an occult force, and they will do anything. As we saw in Idaho and as we saw in Waco, murdering women and children means nothing to them, because that is the cult of Baal, and that's in my Curse of Canaan also. The cult of Baal, ritual murder of children, was a basic factor of that religion. And that is why Jesus preached against. He went out on his ministry to preach against the cult of Baal, the cult of Satanism, the occult. And that was his ministry. And it's just as important today, because the cult of Baal is all around us. Because what was the worship of the cult of Baal? Their temples were houses of prostitution for both male and female prostitutes. And what do we have in the government today of Clinton? We have homosexuals, and we have... The only program he has, apparently, is to force homosexuals on our soldiers who are serving to defend this nation. And of course, when you have homosexuals, you no longer have an effective fighting force. And this is what the military men have tried to tell Clinton. They don't realize he's totally dedicated to the program of bail, and that they have to do this regardless of any obstacles that come up. And of course, the drug trust is totally behind Hillary's health care program, and the mounting, it's supposedly as a way to deal with the costs. And how are they going to deal with this? Well, for a number of years, emissaries of the big insurance companies have been meeting secretly in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the old outlaw territory where the Hole in the Wall gang reigned 100 years ago. They go up to Rockefeller territory to conspire to create a Federal Reserve system of health care. That is exactly what the Clinton health care program is. It's to set up another branch of the Federal Reserve system dealing with the health care industry. And so they meet secretly, just as they met at Jekyll Island, at the Millionaires Club at Jekyll Island to draft the Federal Reserve Act. They've been meeting up in Jackson, Wyoming, with the big insurance companies, which are really branches of the Federal Reserve System. Prudential Insurance, one of their directors is Paul Volcker, who for a number of years was chairman of the board of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. Then you have Aetna Insurance, one of the big five. And on the board of directors is Melvin Laird, who was Secretary of Defense. And all of this ties in together. It's a very small coterie of conspirators and criminals that we're dealing with. And in fact, in almost 50 years of research, I found after about 30 years that no matter what field I went into, I was dealing with the same cast of characters. They're interchangeable. They go in and out of business and government, but they're always representing the same Federal Reserve octopus which controls and owns everything in the United States. And because they have a monopoly, and that's all they're interested in is a monopoly. They don't want to see a free market. They don't want to see individuals being successful, just as the Huguenots were being successful in old royalist France. And you know, after the French massacred and expelled the Huguenots, France declined as a world power and has been declining ever since, simply because they got rid of the most productive element of their population. And where did they go? They came here and founded this nation, and this became the most productive nation in the world. But France, if they had been able to deal with these people, they would have stayed in France, and France would have been the great leader of the world. But instead, they couldn't handle it, and so they massacred them. And now, today, the same satanic forces are not able to deal with you, the productive members of this society. And there again, the only solution they have is to massacre you. And that is their goal, as Raylan Rusbacher said. And it's a shocking thing to say, it's a shocking thing to contemplate, that your government intends to murder you. But I have been up against it for almost 50 years, and I have seen it work, and that is the program that they have. Now, the Hillary Clinton plan, which of course she's only a front, she has nothing to do with it, was actually authored by a man named Alan Enthoven, a professor of management at Stanford University. And I'm the only person that's done the research on this. You'll never see a word about it in any publication in the United States. And he was part of the old Robert McNamara gang at Ford Motor Company in Detroit. And they came up with the Edsel. These were called the miracle men of the motor industry. They came up with the Edsel, which almost wiped out the Ford Company. So they decided they'd better go into government. So Robert McNamara came to Washington and became Secretary of Defense. Now, you know, we used to have a War Department, and for many years, when we had a War Department, we won every war that we engaged in. But after they changed the name to the Defense Department, we have never won a war since. Now, that should tell you something. I always tell my classes in law, I said, you should never be a defendant, always be a plaintiff. And I've always been a plaintiff. Because when you go on the defensive, you are at the mercy of the strategy of your opponent. He is laying down the rules. In boxing, they always say that one fighter will always take the offensive and dominate the action. Then the other fighter has got to be defending himself all the time. He can't get in there and deliver his own punches. And of course, after we had no more War Department, we've lost every war. So there was Robert McNamara at the Secretary of Defense, and who did he bring with him? The same Alan Enthoven as Assistant Secretary of Defense, and this is the man who has drafted the entire medical plan that Clinton is going to foist on the people. And what is Enthoven's plan? It is simply, there at Jackson Hole, they called in emissaries from the five biggest insurance companies in the world, and they drafted a plan. And this plan, of course, will not give you any choice, because I have a letter, a newsletter here from an MD, an establishment doctor, Thomas Dorman of San Luis Obispo, California, and he calls it managed competition, is what Alan Enthoven came up with this plan. And managed competition was a phrase invented by McNamara and his gang at Ford Motor Company. They said, you can't control the competition, you have to manage it. And so that's what they were trying to do. So Dr. Dorman says, compulsory competition and managed health care. And he says, the circus of political activity in Washington, D.C. has brought us managed competition, which he calls fascism. But as he pointed out, in every medical decision, someone has to decide what the cost is going to be and whether we can afford it or not. That's the basis of all health care under the occult system. That's not the basis if you want God to heal you, and if you want to purify yourself, that's an entirely different world. But the managed competition is controlled competition. That is the Rockefeller monopoly, the drug trust, and the medical monopoly operating. And this is the entire basis of the Clinton health care plan. And if this plan goes through, and I'm sure it will, but I have been campaigning all over the country and telling people who is really behind it, and they've put it on hold. Now, I'm not egotistical enough to think that I have done that myself, but in fact, I've raised essential doubts about this plan. And so they've put it on hold. They say they're not even going to have it this year, because I exposed the background, the people who are doing it, why they were doing it, and how they were doing it. And now I really think they're puzzled about how to put this over on the American people, because Spotlight ran an interview with me in November the 30th of last year. I had already exposed the whole thing, and so the word has been getting out, and I really think that they're wondering how they can put this over on the people when I have already exposed who's behind it, that it is the drug trust, it is the medical monopoly, and you're going to have less choice, you're going to have higher costs, but once it's enacted, you're going to be stuck with it, just like you're stuck with the system that we have now. Except that, of course, as Dr. Koenig will tell you, that you do have self-purification, you do have natural remedies at hand, you've always had natural remedies, because God put on earth a cure for every disease. And if we search for it, or if we listen to other people, we can find it. And we don't need the $1,000 pills from the drug trust, because nature does not know how to manufacture a $1,000 pill.
Folks, that
nature's
is
remedies
Mullins.
Are very inexpensive.
Eustace Mullins on Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast, and we're going to be publishing that piece on the website so that you can peruse it at your own speed in your own time. I'll also be tweeting it out and putting it on Facebook. Thank you for tuning in. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
I'm not interested in photo ops.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.